Welcome back to the programme. Tomorrow marks 1 month since the US-backed Gaza ceasefire came into effect. It has largely held, with the conditions of the ceasefire still being fulfilled. The body of Israeli hostage Hadar Golden is due to be handed over by Hamas this afternoon. But 1 month on, and with the death toll now having surpassed 69,000 people, the scale of the rebuilding and recovery needed in Gaza is becoming ever clearer, with aid agencies saying enough aid is still not getting through. We're joined now by Carolyn Willeman, Project Coordinator for Medecins Sans Frontières, who is in Deir al-Bala in Gaza. Caroline, many thanks for joining us this afternoon. Can you tell us what the current situation on the ground in Gaza, where you are, is?
Hi, good afternoon. Indeed, the situation is as you described. There is somewhat more aid entering since the start of the ceasefire now almost a month ago. But given the sheer scale of needs, it simply remains insufficient. We see more food in the markets. I was here in July and August in Gaza City when there was absolutely nothing. This is no longer the case. But the fact that there is food in the markets, for example, it doesn't mean that everybody's eating. Our teams continue to diagnose patients with acute malnutrition every single day. So this really shows that the trucks that are entering, they are better than nothing, but they are absolutely insufficient for the sheer scale of needs of this area that has been devastated by these 2 years of genocide.
Well, some trucks entering, as you say, but are there other trucks waiting to get in? And if so, what's the delay?
What we've been experiencing for 2 years, and not only us, but also other aid organizations, is that there is really a continued bureaucratic delay to enter aid. So since the start of the ceasefire, for example, us as MSF, we've had 15 trucks enter. We've had three that were rejected. Some of these three then a few days later actually approved with the same paperwork, with the same content. And indeed, there are continued impediments, in particular for the so-called dual use items. So those are the items defined by the Israeli authorities as technically they could be used for either civilian or military use. What this means for us is really vital equipment for water sanitation, for sterilization equipment in our hospitals, spare parts for our cars, for our washing machines, external fixators that are used to quite literally keep together the bones of our patients who have very, very complex broken bones. And these items, we have now been able to enter some of them, but it remains complicated. We see similar issues as well for agencies trying to bring in shelter, which will be like the need is enormous. The reality is that hundreds of thousands of people will spend this winter in tents. And so they need better quality tents, they need blankets, they need mattresses. And this is really not yet entering at the scale of the need.
There is, of course, also a huge amount of waste and rubbish that has built up over the course of the war. That presumably causing concerns about the potential spread of disease as well, Caroline.
Yes, exactly. And this actually goes hand in hand also with the access to water, which has improved a little bit since the start of the ceasefire, with more fuel coming in and therefore the water desalination plants being able to run somewhat more. But really, we see in our primary healthcare clinics, we see skin conditions in our patients that are absolutely related to the very poor living conditions that people are in. We see many infections also in wounds. We do a lot of wound care. But of course, if you live in a tent without access to a proper water source and to the sufficient quantities of water that you need, it's extremely difficult to keep the hygiene levels that are necessary to, for example, keep these wounds clean.
Are some parts of the enclave in an even worse situation? For example, northern Gaza, where the aid shortage was described as particularly acute.
Yes, this is indeed the case that we see in northern Gaza, even as because the borders from the northern side have not yet opened. So there's only the southern borders that have opened for some trucks to cross. And of course, with this last offensive on Gaza City in the weeks leading up to the ceasefire, the level of destruction there is enormous. And this is something also that many of my colleagues tell me, the ones who are based in Gaza City, who've had to flee in those last weeks before the ceasefire towards the middle or the south area. they are unable to return, whether it is because their houses have been destroyed, there is so much rubble in the street that it's impossible even to set up a tent, but also services are not yet restarted. So, for example, access to water, access to electricity, that is really stopping people from returning to their area after having fled in the last month.
We've been talking about the most basic of needs. Among that, Caroline, what hope is there for longer term rebuilding of homes and infrastructure in Gaza?
I mean, that's really indeed a very, very long-term plan. And as I said, like, the reality is that at the very least this winter, but potentially many more to come, there will be scores of people living in tents. And then we're only talking about rebuilding infrastructure. There's rebuilding people as well. There are huge needs in terms of rehabilitation, people with amputations, with other complex wounds, people who've received only the very basic life saving care during the genocide, because it was simply not possible for the medical system to do anything more than that. Many people who have not had access to medical care for example, non-communicable diseases during the genocide, because, again, like, the pressure on the healthcare system was so high. And then I'm not yet even speaking about, like, the mental health toll, which will take decades and generations for people to overcome the horrors that they have lived in these 2 years.
Many thanks for joining us, Caroline Willeman, Project Coordinator for MSF in Gaza. Well, that's it from the This Week programme for today. Thanks to our team. On sound was Harry Booklis, our broadcast coordinator was Stephen Higgins, the editor of the programme was Margaret Curley. Stay tuned for Sunday Sport, which is up next here on Radio 1. But for now, from me, Fiona Mitchell, and all the team, thanks very much for listening, and have a very good afternoon.